Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Madam, one of my brothers has arrived to stay with us for a short term.
Oh, how wonderful, darling. Is this the posh one who howls opera?
Julian? Oh, no, madam. It's Jed. He prefers country music.
Oh, my. The one who yodels when he howls. I'll bet I know how this is going to go.
Madam, I wish you wouldn't make assumptions and stereotype Brother Jed. Now, if you would be so kind as to welcome him with a healing spell and some bandages. He's been in a fight with a Wendigo in Phantom Forest.
Oh, yes. How silly of me. Let me see what I can do. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. Won't you please make yourself at home and find a comfortable spot of your choice in the reading room? I am your mistress of the Midnight Library, Miranda Merrick. I hope everyone who has planned to and endeavored to be here with us tonight has actually arrived here. That's always nice. I like it when you make it here safely to hear a story. What happens if you stray beyond the cordoned off areas in the library, and how and if you make it back to your vehicle or home in the village? Well, I certainly wish you all the best with that, too. As you enter the library tonight, some of you may have caught a passing glimpse of Mr. Darling's little brother, Mr. Jed Darling, this evening as he trotted upstairs to a guest room on the third floor. That was him in a charming flannel shirt and torn denim blue jeans. He's quite an amiable gentleman once you get to know him. He's musically talented and a true outdoorsman. He's also more rugged in his nature than our own dapper Mr. Darling. Which reminds me, I do apologize for the extra fur flying about the library lately. The wolf pups are shedding their winter coats, and that trail of blood in the foyer is for decorative purposes. Now, let's get on with our reading for tonight, shall we? Interestingly, it seems as though lately many of us are on the same wavelength, as they say, because at the very same time that I was consulting my spirit guides through my scrying mirror as to which topic would be most beneficial for you to now become accustomed to, we received two fan letters via the post requesting the exact same subject that the spirits directed. See, some of you are much more in tune with the netherworld than you even imagined was possible. So, good for you, Spooky Lovelies. And what is the spirit-recommended and patron-popular story about? Wendigos, my dear guests. Wondrous Wendigos. I'm compelled here to point out the ironic fact of how many of you are craving them. Honestly, you become more endearing to me all the time. This subject is a particular joy for me to bring to you because long ago and way back in my family, I have a bloodline that leads to one of this topic's points of origin, the Great Lakes region of North America. Wendigos also have their bony historical feet firmly planted in much of the southern boundary regions of Canada, where so many of the Native American people initially inhabited these wild, sprawling lands. And I'm sure that many of you may know that this mid-to-northern area of the United States is rumored to be host and home to numerous cryptic beings and haunted landscapes and myth-style monsters and lore-laden lakes. Just a few of these are South Bay Bessie, the age-old sea monster said to live in the depths of Lake Erie, and a favorite of our friends, the Lore Men. The world-famous, doom-predicting Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, who was ridiculously rumored to have once stayed in our Red Room guest room and ruined three sets of sheets. The illustrious Loveland Frogman is said to dwell in Loveland, Ohio. And from Louisville, Kentucky, we have the compelling-sounding Pope Lick Monster, which I'll just make a little note to read up on just now, if you don't mind. All of these creatures you'll notice seem to have about them a kind of earthbound nature in some way, being that they seem to have somehow sprung from the very landscape of their noted territory. Swampy bipedal beings and slick-backed lake monsters, even our friend the Mothman, the mind-reading monster, could speak the language of the doomed people he contacted. He had a relatable familiarity about him. But rest assured that our creature tonight hasn't got a lot of any of these reassuring qualities, I'm afraid. No, it's all darkness, weirdness, and ghoulishness from here on out. Nightmarish misery, fiendish psychosis, and rabid cannibalism. Please stay seated. There's no turning back once you're here. Thank you. Sheesh. So first, let's discuss the elusive nature of these magnificent, malicious monsters, just to set some friendly parameters to work within. There are a few delightful possibilities. 1. Wendigos are thought to be actual forest-dwelling creatures, vicious, animalistic, human-attacking beasts, which we totally understand such beings here, of course. Alternatively, they are thought to be human beings gone mad, generally men who, for various reasons, have willingly or possibly unwillingly become driven by the idea of eating other humans. Nice. For them, it's an irresistible compulsion, like love. Another theory, one which we like as much as the others, but which some reject outright and others fully embrace, is that Wendigos are evil spirits or demons from other dimensions or realms that can freely appear to then attack or even inhabit or influence by inducing terror in humans, which we also find to be an admirable quality under any circumstances. Did I say that out loud? Next, I feel it's important and justly due to cite the rich wellspring of the origin of these beings. The prolific lore of the Wendigo is born out of the Algonquin tribespeople of the North American continent. These were groups of indigenous people who inhabited the mid and lower Canadian regions, as well as the northern boundary territories and Great Lakes regions of the United States, before either of them were officially named Canada and the United States. The word Algonquin is French in origin and referred to the people of the Ottawa River Valley. It can also reference the language or dialect spoken by the various tribes who were from this area. With the addition of an extra syllable, the word becomes Algonquian, as in, those Algonquian people sure know their Wendigos. The Ojibwa, Odawa, Arapaho, Mohican, and Blackfeet tribes are just a few considered to be Algonquin people. Interestingly, the Anishinaabe tribe name means original person. But the word Wendigo has many forms depending on the mostly verbal history of the earliest people telling and retelling of its frightening existence. Just a few variations derived from the many tribes are Wendigo, Windgo, Windiga, Waitigo, and Winsigo. Here in the library, we've read that the stories of the Wendigo had been told and retold by tribe elders to their children, and when those children grew into adults, they then told the very same terrifying cautionary tales to their own children. And all tried as diligently as possible to heed the story's main rule, to respect the wilderness, and to keep your wits about you when you're there, and to be mindful of your inner voice that directs your attitude toward yourself and others. Regarding the wilderness, more so then, but even so now, it can be a place of great unknown chance, unpredictable and unexplainable happenings, and harsh or even cruel realities. Believe it or not, there are still uninhabited, untamed landscapes that exist that are covered by dense forest, rocky canyons, dangerous outcroppings, and filled with biting, stinging, venomous creatures, and merciless wild animals that would love to taste and then eat you. It's been like this for millions of years. Our mysterious old globe offers plenty of places where you are not at the top of the food chain. And the Native American people have always had a philosophy about the world that you may not know of. To them, just as the living beings that inhabit this world are said to be imbued with a spirit, the ghosty host inside of you that doesn't even need a body to exist, the Native people have long believed that so has everything else that exists. So not only you and all of the Earth's other animals and trees and plants have a spirit, but also the waters of the lakes and rivers, the soil, the rocks, the air, the seasons the Earth passes through, and even fire is believed to have a living spirit that dwells within it. And to them, not all spirits are good. Some are powerfully evil and have otherworldly capabilities. The Wendigo in this form is one such spirit being. Let's face what some believe to be facts, shall we? What are we dealing with here? Well, Wendigos in this first telling are said to be spirit monsters who dwell within the wilderness. They can appear in a ghastly physical form, said to be hardly more than a walking corpse with a heart of solid ice that hangs frozen in their putrid ribcage. They are possessed by one thought and one evil errand alone: to eat human beings. It is believed that in doing so, the demon-spirited Wendigo gains power and sustenance from consuming the human's body and soul. The ravenous wraiths were referred to as spirits of the lonely places, or the evil spirit that devours mankind. They are the spiritual incarnation of winter, insatiable hunger, and personal greed. I shall now read to you the direct quote from Mr. Basil H. Johnston, an Ojibwe teacher and scholar from Ontario. His description reads thusly. The Wendigo was gaunt to the point of emaciation, its desiccated skin pulled tightly over its bones. With its bones pushing out against its skin, its complexion had the ash gray of death, and its eyes pushed back deep into their sockets. The Wendigo looked like a gaunt skeleton, recently disinterred from the grave. What lips it had were tattered and bloody. Unclean and suffering from suppuration of the flesh, the Wendigo gave off a strange and eerie odor of decay and decomposition, of death and corruption. Well, he sounds fine to us. We wouldn't hold his nature against him. Poor thing. When European explorers and settlers encountered the indigenous Native American tribespeople, the natives often warned the witless visitors of the hungry spirit beasts, the Wendigos, that roamed and hunted humans in the lands beyond their settlements. They told them of how they had seen the upright walking bony creatures and found the ripped apart remains of people from neighboring tribes and even discovered their own people, their dismembered bodies strewn about the forest floor and hanging in bloody shreds from the trees. Well, who's hungry? Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is brought to you by Grimm's Grocers. If you have a hungry Wendigo, perhaps too young to hunt, you should know Grimm's Grocers has exactly what he wants. Say it's a silly holiday and oh so late at night. Your pet Wendigo is hungry and you worry he might bite. Who has just the right grub to soothe his growling tummy? Who serves a human being club so he doesn't nibble his mummy? Grimm's Grocers makes just what you need to fill your starving beast. From leg of man with poppy seeds to a ladyfinger feast. Just call ahead and ask for Neville and order what you wish. Raw or cooked or even deviled, he serves a fiendish dish. Knock three times and slide your bills beneath the jet black door. Grimm's Grocers has what gives you chills, but your Wendigo will adore. Grimm's special this week is Serena's Savage Salve. It's the no-scream cream that treats all the scrapes, gouges, bites, and puncture wounds your little monster comes home with. Serena uses only the freshest toad slime to stop that pesky bleeding. If that's the effect you want. Grimm's Grocers at the corner of Vincent and Price. The native tribesmen of the Naskapi and Innu people described a feature of the Wendigo creature that not every other culture did. When they relayed their forewarnings to foreign visitors, they plainly explained that the Wendigo they knew of were enormously tall, perhaps 15 feet tall. The towering skeletal beings were storied to easily blend in amongst the bare branches of the old dead trees. They could easily snatch up any man, woman, or child that happened by and voraciously eat them. Alternatively, in addition to being stealthy, silent stalkers, they could also move impossibly fast, giving their victims nearly zero chance of outrunning them. Apparently, these bony beasts have several useful talents that allow them to exist and survive for, well, no one knows how long a Wendigo may live because they don't really look as though they're alive in the first place. It's its starved-to-death appearance that is the all-consuming point of the Wendigo's nature. They seem to be more dead than alive, and after eating a human, they remain insatiably hungry. It is believed that a Wendigo could be killed, but it doesn't seem that they ever died due to unpleasant circumstances alone. In some tellings, they could apparently endure the harshest blizzards and long winters, even if their prey were to take an inordinately long time to stumble into their territory. The Wendigo were always there, always waiting. Allegedly expert hunters. Their missing or even rotted noses could, or should I say can, detect a warm-blooded person from miles away. And not only are some of the lanky giants not easily noticed by humans, but some of the hunger-driven fiends are said to have an amazing ability to mimic precisely the human voice. Not necessarily to speak, but to use this ability to moan or whimper or cry out, perhaps like that of an injured child, to lure the plump, meaty human just a little bit closer. As I stated earlier, many of the monstrous descriptions by various tribespeople and later the settlers that chose to stay in their new territories told of more actual massive land mammals. Hunters, explorers, and even a few savaged survivors began to describe their encounters and even grisly attacks from wildly strange hulking beasts. Beasts that didn't seem to fit the usual suspects of mountain lions, bears, or wolves. They were convinced they had been in the company of something else entirely, often wildly babbling that what they had seen was way bigger than a bear. This creature was emaciated with gray or green skin that barely covered its decaying bones. They said it lunged at them with impossibly long human-like arms and clawed fingers and lurched over their heads with snapping yellow fangs and a long putrid black and red tongue. Hands up, who believes them? So many of you. I believe them. I can't think why just now, but, I definitely believe them. And just when you thought this story couldn't get any more bizarre, I have another nearly revolting aspect to add, so consider this a warning. I did contemplate for a while as to whether to include this morsel in my notes, and then finally decided to include it. Lucky you. Squeamish folks, just plug your ears and hum for a minute or so, maybe. So, historically, there's a more warped telling in Algonquin Chippewa folklore that tells of long ago when a Wendigo kidnapped a native boy, but didn't eat the boy as he was too thin. The Wendigo had a plan to fatten the boy up over time as he held the boy captive, and to treat himself when the boy became a bit chubby. The monster carried a knife with which he would sometimes cut the boy's flesh to check the thickness of it, but the child remained too thin and skinny for his liking. He sent the boy into an encampment of a different tribe to beg for food that would fatten him up, and instructed him to quickly return. The frightened boy pleaded with the neighboring tribe to save him, even showing them the cuts in his flesh the Wendigo had made. And they could hear the Wendigo crying out for the boy to return, and several braves decided to daringly go and find it. They followed the cries of the beast, and when they found it, they cut its long legs from beneath it and saw it crash to the ground. They quickly fled and left it to die. Days later, they returned to the spot where they had left the legless creature, only to discover that it hadn't died at all. The Wendigo was found there, alive, and eating its own legs, contently ripping the spongy marrow from its long and splitted leg bones. The young braves asked the feasting beast if there was any fat on its legs as it ate. And the beast replied that there was plenty, as it had eaten so many of their family members. They immediately chopped the rest of the Wendigo into pieces, which killed it, allegedly. So, obviously, the poor things just have to eat, even if it's themselves. Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is sponsored by the League of Lady Gravediggers. When you're walking in our woods, just have a good look around. There's all the typical forest goods, but not many bones to be found. If a Wendigo leaves some bones behind them, or a man-wolf leaves a few, those lady gravediggers always find them, and you know what they do. Those grave-digging ladies are neat, it's true, meticulous to say the least. They'll bury the bits of folks you knew, an assortment of the deceased. Big Lou's found a vertebrae, and Penny's found a patella. Just whose they were, we cannot say. Some crunched-up gal or fella. They gather the bones into a bucket, all the chips and sinewy pieces. They dig a grave, and in they chuck it, all the neighbors, nephews, and nieces. The League of Lady Gravediggers, they're the girls we all admire. They treat the dead with vim and vigor, for hobby and for hire. If you are in need of a fast and furious burial, call the League of Lady Gravediggers at 976-DITCH-WITCHES. Let us move on to perhaps a more pleasant and practical approach with this question. How is a Wendigo made? Well, not the old-fashioned way, that's for sure, but there are a variety of possibilities, it seems. The lore handed down by some of the First Nations people believed that Wendigos were greedy or gluttonous spirits who could choose to haunt or be made to haunt the wilderness. The bare spirit of wickedness, evil, and gluttony, embodied and made real. So in this manner, the being serves as a cautionary warning in the telling of it, to warn children as well as grown people to be mindful of becoming greedy or cautious of entertaining selfish thoughts, because a Wendigo was also believed to be created when a human fell under their influence. Wendigos, it's been said, have supernatural abilities, the power to perceive a person's weaknesses, foibles, and character flaws. They naturally know when they've encountered a person who's nasty at their core. If the person is self-centered enough or their thoughts are tipped toward evil, They can be made more so by the Wendigo, who may color their basic thoughts with visions of vicious victories, of themselves tearing into the supple flesh of the vulnerable. And when the vile person can fully envision themselves in monster form, they are then transformed into a Wendigo. There's even a charming bit of bleed over from the old werewolf folklore we've all heard that says a Wendigo need only to bite a person in order for a new one to be created. And we can only say that this is a rare directive that seems to vary greatly depending upon the breed of biting monster or beast from what we've read, anyway. Now, I thought we should expound just a bit on the look of these esoteric beasts, just briefly. In native people's tellings of them, they are generally human-looking, in that they are upright-walking and patchy-covered or pelt-covered skeletal beings, albeit with gaping, animal-like, fang-filled jaws. However, it should be noted and duly credited that we weren't gifted with the vision of the antlered bedecked creatures so many of us are so fond of until a certain time. Somewhat modern times, in fact. You may have seen this treat of a beast in a film or perhaps a vivid dream you'll have later when you sleep. Of an enormous, raging, rotting human with the elongated skull of an elk with a set of dagger-like antlers, or even the bare skull of a ram with contorted spiraling horns. Don't worry, you won't have to have a preference. Your subconscious mind will choose which one. Anyway, these antler tools are often used to conveniently stab or pin their victims to the ground. But they didn't officially appear as part of the Wendigo's impressive anatomy until writer-director Larry Fessenden came up with the idea of the terrifying imagery by merging stories he'd been told as a child. Yes, you heard that correctly. With stories in a book you may be familiar with. The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series by Alvin Schwartz in 1981. The portrayal of the monsters with this attractive physical feature has been steadfast ever since. Isn't that wonderful? Well, we've reached a point in our illustrious story where I'd like to lead you down another path, whether you want to go or not. Let me fix that up a bit. I'm going to tell you about options, possibly. Maybe compulsions is a better word. Condition. I'm going to tell you about a condition, a human condition that can turn people inhuman. This is going to be grim and is known as Wendigo psychosis, and has been proposed to be an actual psychological affliction. Throughout time, in every culture, and ever since languages were first written down for others to read, and even before then, when tales were told in voices only, there have been stories. The official term is anthropophagist, which sounds as though it comes with rare knowledge, great honor, and an elegantly framed degree from an esteemed college, allowing erudite people to say such things as, "I earned my PhD in anthropophagy. I'm a practicing anthropophagist. Have your people call my people." However, the etymology proves quite differently. The Greek root word anthropos means human being, combined with the word phago, phagio, or phagin, meaning to eat, An anthropophagist is plainly a cannibal, one who eats people. So, have my people eat your people. Seriously, though, it should be noted that historically, in some cultures, the grieving take part in sacred ceremonies in which they ritualistically consume some of the flesh of their newly deceased relatives. Sometimes the dead are cremated first, and their ashes are mixed into drinks that are then imbibed by their bereft family members. These practices are believed to be sacred and thought to keep the dead person's spirit and memory alive within those who have partaken of them. This is similar to, but vastly different from, Wendigo psychosis. This is also different from those who have, under extreme and dire circumstances, been forced to make the abhorrent decision to engage in cannibalism in order to survive. Like some in the famously doomed Donner Party, who, under ill advisement, took a cutoff that sealed their fate, and the more recent survivors of the Chilean plane crash catastrophe that did the same. These are examples of regular human beings pushed to the point of having to behave in a manner that they would never, ever consider under any other circumstances. They had to eat their fellow dead in order to stop or, sadly, only delay themselves from dying. For most human beings, the very thought of this act is so repellent. Some would rather die rather than to engage in it. One thing is certain. We, none of us, truly know what we would do in the moment until we were forced to decide. Let us hope we never have to. Wendigo psychosis is what people who were willingly or uncontrollably obsessed with eating other people were said to be inflicted with. There were a glut of these cases in the late 1800s, but the most popular story of a person said to have had this condition is that of Swift Runner, a member of the Cree tribe in 1878. There are varying versions of the layout of this actual documented case, but it is documented and goes something like this. Within the Plains Cree tribe in the 1870s, Swift Runner was a tall, imposing, but typical native man. He worked as a successful hunter and trapper who traded with the Hudson's Bay Company, a supplier of animal meats, hides, and pelts. Swift Runner also had sufficient knowledge of the surrounding land and so worked as a guide for the Northwest Mounted Police. These jobs kept him and his large family for many years until something changed. It may have been a habit of drinking, or the onset of several punishing winters, or perhaps both, that caused Swift Runner to become a disruption to his tribe. He was rumored to be combative and to often create a hellish environment around himself. He was either made to leave the grounds of his tribal area or chose to leave, and moved himself, his wife, and their six children some 25 miles away, deep into the lonesome wilderness. No one heard much from them for a few years. Then came a cruel winter. There were repeated heavy snowstorms, leaving feet upon feet of fallen snow, prolonged sub-zero temperatures, no trade or influx of any food or goods to the area, just the onset of famine animals and people freezing, starving, and dying. Swift Runner somehow made his way into town by spring. He told the severely underfed surviving tribe members the tragic tale of how his wife had become despondent and committed suicide, and that all of his children had starved to death. The gaunt people listened, but in the most obvious game of one of these things is not like the others, Swift Runner looked unusually fit, stout, in fact, compared to his undernourished neighbors. Some reports say it was the townspeople who alerted the mounted police. Some say it was Swift Runner's own in-laws who disbelieved him. But he was escorted back to his faraway encampment by several local policemen, whom it is safe to say were not prepared for what they were about to see. Human bones of every size and shape were reportedly strewn about on the ground surrounding the small cabin and campfire in front of it. Swift Runner explained that he could only bury one of his children in the snow-covered frozen ground. When they inquired about the largest skull, he told them that that was his wife. When they asked why all of the remains were bare, not only not clothed or covered in skin, or respectfully covered with pelts or branches, but raw bones torn from their adjoining bones, some with the marrow cleaned from the inside of them, some discolored from being roasted. Swift Runner began to talk of his cursed dreams, in which a giant festering wendigo began telling him how delicious his children and wife would taste, how they could be cooked to make the finest meal a human being could eat. He told them how the minute he would fall asleep, the wendigo would begin its flesh-laden tirade, even showing him platters of delicious food, all made from his family. When hunger and madness became one in his mind, he claimed that he and the wendigo were a solitary entity as well, and that the wendigo was then in charge, and it had killed, cooked, and eaten his entire family. Swift Runner was arrested and taken back into town, along with a collection of a few of his family's skulls and bones as evidence. A court case ensued, during which members of his tribe were at least somewhat willing to believe the story of the taunting dream creature, the Wendigo. But the court and most of the others in the jury were not. Swift Runner never denied what happened and admitted to the details several times during the trial, but pointed to the Wendigo as who it was who had completed the massacre. The judge and jury couldn't see the invisible beast, only the well-fed, frightful man in front of them. He was found guilty and hanged. There were apparently several cases of Wendigo psychosis among the Algonquin people before this famous case, and only a few after. Within the tribes, when a person was taken over by the evil spirit of a Wendigo, and then became wild and was believed to be a Wendigo, there were sometimes sacred rituals and spiritual cleansing ceremonies performed on them by the elder shaman of the tribes. These supposedly worked and cured the mad person from killing others and consuming them. Sometimes. When the ancient magic failed, the Wendigo person was sometimes killed to save the others around them. As the times changed and the laws governing all of the people progressed, both the tribal magic and the ritual murders within the tribes to solve the problem were done away with and left to the state to deal with. Cases of Wendigo psychosis either decreased severely or perhaps went underreported to the new authorities. In modern times, it remains very difficult to prove innocence by reason of insanity. Guilty but insane is more likely. Intent and premeditation are often the contributing factors that do people in, so to speak. And if there's one thing we're guilty of here in the Midnight Library, it's being insane enough to have all of you here to hear such dark tales about hungry monsters, both real and mythical. Let me advise you to take to heart some of the old wisdom of the native people, and one person left from the Donner Party. As you make your way through our woods tonight, be respectful of the old forest that surrounds you. Keep your heart light and have high regards for the other people. Hurry along as quickly as you can, and don't take no cutoffs. Good night, my dear guests, and sweet dreams.
Where did you go near the end of the reading, darling? Your blood tea is almost cold.
I do apologize, madam. I heard a knock on a secret side door, and when I opened it, a huge, stinking Wendigo stood before me, mumbling, Jed.
Mr. Darling, I love having your brother here, but sadly we cannot have gut-ripping fights on the premises. The cleaning is too costly. Please send them into the forest to fight.
Apparently they're not fighting, madam. They're dating.
Oh, ugh. That sounds messier.
I've sent them to the Broom and Fag. Shall we go spy on them?
Absolutely.
The Midnight Library is proudly brought to you by everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris and Jason at Sounds Like an Earful. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I would love to hear from you personally. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And our wonderful but warped merch is available from Redbubble on redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary.